Before we get into today's episode with visual artist Al Mazur, we have a great conversation about meditation, about self-acceptance, self-love, about the artistic process, about boundaries to your creativity and to your personal space. I just want to say that I am very, very thankful for Ethos for sponsoring the Flip the Script podcast and for giving me a discount code for you all, FTS20 for 20% off across the range. I myself have been using the products for years, and that's why it was such a natural fit for me to contact Ethos to be the sponsors of Flip the Script. And I have made great use of the Active and Rest CBD drops. The Active drops have vitamin D, which help me with staving off head colds, because I am very, very susceptible to getting head colds when I'm training, especially in wintertime. I'm training hard, so I take them every day, and I take the rest drops just before going to bed because it gives me that kind of body-mind connection that I'm taking these drops, and it's a high-dose CBD drop that helps me get a restful night's sleep and recover. Sleep is the most important aspect of recovery. Anything I can do to help with that is fantastic. And I use their repair balm, their CBD repair balm, basically on a daily basis to help me with inflammation, to even act as a kind of a massage oil so that I can get rid of, you know, sore spots that I have when I'm training hard. So that code again is FTS20. If you want to just try out some of their CBD products, if you're new to the CBD idea or new to having it in your day to day, it is a fantastic thing to add to your recovery regime. So thank you so much to Ethos, and here is the episode with Al Mazur. Welcome to back to the podcast. This is episode 15 of season 3, and I'm joined with a man today. Probably would have been easier to have like a wild lion on the podcast than this man, because the amount of times we've set dates and it's like, nah, man, actually, it just doesn't work. And then on my side, I'm like, nah, it doesn't work. But finally got him into the studio today. And that man is Al Mazur. Thanks very much for coming on, Al.
Thanks for having me, Connor.
Yeah. So... I could rattle off a few things about you here and do a terrible job of introducing yourself. But would you introduce yourself to everybody?
Yeah. My name's Al. I'm a visual artist based in Dublin, from Dublin. Started as a graffiti writer. More commonly known as street art now. Then sort of just progressed on to making a career out of it, going more into the sort of contemporary gallery space, contemporary murals, creative sort of endeavors, things like that. So, yeah, it's hard to sort of sum up.
But like, how did you first pick up just like, because like, you know, I found graffiti to be very cool looking.
Yeah.
How did you kind of go, right, I'm going to try this thing?
Yeah. Probably the same thing. I thought it was cool. There was a pals of mine, I think they're eldest brother, one of the lads, Goose, his brother, Lachlan, was a graffiti writer, and he was sort of cool, and we were talking earlier about hip-hop and stuff like that, and he had all the records, and we were sort of getting into hip-hop and coming of age there, and it just sort of tickled that interest. Always loved art. Going right back as a kid, you know, I remember... a friend, Vinny, his dad was a graphic designer, and he brought us to the National Gallery with some charcoals and stuff. And so that was one of my first experiences of art, and really enjoying it, sitting in the National Gallery and doing a very, very bad version of a Caravaggio or whatever was on the wall. And so that was always with me from that sort of age. Then in school, I guess the art room was sort of a place of refuge that I would go to. I wasn't very good in school. I thought I wasn't a good student. I believe I actually am a good student. It's just that system probably didn't apply very well for me. So then coming around the age of 14, 15, you know, you're getting older. You're beginning to get a bit more, I don't know how to describe it, mischievous. But I found that graffiti and that sort of subculture lent itself quite well to my interests already. And then the people that were within that subculture, I found I was aligned more with them than I was with sort of other peer groups. Like, I wasn't a kid that wanted to play soccer or something like that. I did kick the ball around and stuff, but I definitely always felt like I was orbiting on the periphery a little bit from the normal social activities. And so anyway, yeah, this little pocket of artists, the graffiti writers, sort of, I could definitely feel as it was quite relatable. And that's where it really, really it grew from there around the age of 15, 16, sparked an interest.
Yeah, I think I've talked to so many different people on the podcast and where like the idea of like finding your tribe of life, you know what I mean? And like, yeah. I think it's so important because, you know, you're fed the whole lone wolf thing these days, I think.
Right? I don't really believe in that. So yeah. Much.
You know, and I'm like this idea of like the lone wolf goes off and does his thing and, you know, he doesn't need to go out and party and do all this stuff. And I just like, I'm like looking at all the people that I'm like, these people seem to have a very, very good, you know, way of living, and they all have good interpersonal relationships and they all have good kind of a connection through that.
Yeah.
So when you found this group of people that you were able to kind of explore your, let's say your, what you wanted to in the kind of artistic world.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of how you, let's say, got started into this whole thing. And when did it kind of switch up for you to where you were like, I don't know, I would love to try and make something, you know, a career. Like, not a career, but like, I would like to try and make money out of this.
Yeah, that was never really a main focus because there was no career or anything like that or possibilities of making money out of it. Like, you wouldn't have been going around telling people you did graffiti. You know, so this is now, this is pre, if I was to put a very broad blanket on it, this is a lot of pre Banksy's existence to us mainstream public, like, you know, so he definitely made a massive shift for sure to the accessibility of the artwork and stuff like that. So, we sort of just did it and it was sort of always on the sideline and it was lovely purity to that because you've just sort of, you did it for each other and your community, and you sort of you tried to, you were inspired by others. You wanted to, it was like healthy competition. Well, it's very competitive as well because people do go and sort of cross each other out and go over each other's artwork. And we did that as well, which is fun.
So like this is obviously like you could say it's counterculture, this kind of counter establishment kind of a type of deal. Did you ever have that kind of an idea about it?
No, I don't think I had the awareness to understand why we were doing it at that time. But in hindsight, probably looking back, yeah, it's probably things in our life. If I was to pick, like, generalize a lot of the artists that were doing it, there's usually a narrative that was coming up quite a lot. Like, you know, it might be issues at home or, I know that this is me just sort of pulling from this right now as I think, but it's usually something that would be a motivator to sort of rebel in some way. I wasn't doing it for rebellious reasons because I was doing a sort of definitely nurture that artistic want that I had. And then it put me in a space with people who are like-minded. I got to explore the city. Then I got to explore countries. Mm. You know, we were flying over to the UK to paint walls there out in Brixton. We were going to Holland to paint, going to different music festivals, Roskilde Festival in Denmark. We're going there quite a lot. So you get pay for your flights and go over and get free paint and food and paint a music festival. So then you're also building that community, you're getting to know other guys, other artists. So there wasn't really too much thought put into it. It was more action and it was just really, really enjoyable. And then I was getting to sort of express myself through these letter forms. Like, probably looking back now, yeah, there was definitely a lot to do with the idea of mark making. I want to be present, and maybe these young artists maybe felt they didn't have a voice, they weren't seen. So the actual physical act of writing a name on the wall sort of could give you that sort of, when I was thinking back, I was sort of looking at that. I was on the dart going into town one day and I was looking at it, sort of triggered it a bit. It's like, yeah, I think we sort of want to leave our mark. It's as simple as that is, but it's actually quite complicated. We want to be present and let people know we're here and not sort of get sucked into society, you know, that conformist idea.
Yeah. So it's not so much like anti-establishment, but it like this is what intrigued me most about the idea of being an artist.
Right.
Is that art is like, and this is something that my friend who's also an artist touched on yesterday about like that these non-necessities.
Okay.
Right. So like you could make the argument that art is not a necessity.
Yeah.
Right. Bridges, right, are a necessity to cross rivers. Right?
Okay.
You know, accountants are necessities for business.
Okay.
You know, solicitors are necessities for...
Is business necessary?
Yeah. Is business necessary is a good question. And you're like lawyers or whatever, engineers are necessary for buildings, and buildings are necessary for shelter for us or whatever. Or, you know, scientists are necessary for medicines and for food production and all these kind of things.
Yeah. Right?
And I would argue, yes, for me as a person, that art has given me probably as much as any of those other professions have given.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But how do you conduct your life and make that jump? Because there's got to be lots of people that are in your situation, right? That are like, I feel a need to show my artistic and creative nature, but I'm being fucking sucked in by like the leaving cert and sucked in by
paying
my dad.
Rent.
Yeah.
Fucking out here.
You know what I mean? Paying rent. And my dad wants me to be a dentist. And I want to be a good career. Do you know? Good career, good money in it. But what I'm trying to say, how did you have that fight ever?
Yes, I still have it. Like the system will still try and pull you back to not to sort of continue doing what you want to do. So it's always that push and pull and just sort of fight and navigate your way through to try and keep your voice, but then still sort of live within this system where we have to pay bills and mortgages and all those bits. But when you're referencing art and its relevance or importance in comparison to other fields, I guess, if you just sort of put it like that, what necessity does it have? It sort of, if you look at Ireland, like it does give its whole cultural identity, you know. Without it, it is just green fields and rocks and the sea beside it, you know. I think art and culture makes that grass greener. You know, the Yanks wouldn't be coming over here otherwise, you know. So art is literature. It's Jack B. Yeats, you know, from going right back there like that. But so it has huge significance, because then if you want to put it into that sort of system world, like, well, then there's no tourism without art. There's no this or what, you know, without culture or art. So it just doesn't maybe have a linear format the way other professions do. It is more of a abstract way. But it's ingrained in all of us. Like, I'm literally looking at this piece of wood here.
Yeah.
You know, we could be just on a, this is an artistic piece, you know. So it's ingrained in the ethos logo on your chest.
Yeah.
It's creative. Everything around you
is art.
It's art.
Yeah, 100%.
Lighting design.
Even what I pulled through there of like the idea of the bridge is art.
Yeah.
Right, because it's a functional engineers piece of art. Yeah.
Form and function, yeah.
100%. And so that point you just hit on there of like, there, when there is no linear path and you have to carve it yourself, how did you feel about that?
Yeah, and it's something that it's hard when then the second part there you're asking, like, how did you do it? Well, there is no linear path, and it's still in the sphere of just sort of going around and trying to grasp onto things and figure it out and pull it into making sense for you. There is no step-by-step way of a career or a successful career. And then what is success? Like, you might have asked me onto the podcast because you consider that I'm at a point of success in my career, but from someone that's in a gallery in New York, it's like he's nowhere near success. Or where am I with my success? I feel I'm getting closer to it. My success now is sort of becoming more accepting who I am, being happy with what I produce, and that's only actually happened in the last 2 years. I'm 42, so if I was to say to any artist, it sometimes may take a bit of time. But there's a lot of layers to unpack, like, in that sort of question. But Yeah.
Yeah. No. I 100% can see kind of everything unfolding there within your words of like, you know, what is success to me is a question that I find incredibly interesting to answer.
Yeah. I hear it quite a lot, and I was actually mindful of coming on the podcast because I feel I'm in a space, maybe just what's in front of me is like everyone having answers and solutions to everything. And it's nice not knowing shit as well. And I feel there's a lot of empowerment in not having the answers. So I was sort of mindful of coming on here, but like, what can I offer you? Because I probably don't have any credible foresights, or, you know, mindful of artists listening, and they're like, but hopefully through this conversation we might pull out something or might get something from an artist that might be relevant for an artist. But definitely the thing I hear quite a lot is like, you know, maxing out and finding your best self, which is, I understand, but I've sort of come to like this, what's my best self and what are the sacrifices I have to do to get that and what are the compromises? So if I want to be able to make these incredible paintings and want to have New York shows every year, what am I going to sacrifice? And are those values actually more important, my wife and my child? Mm-hmm. And sort of, so maybe I don't need to reach the best of myself, you know, maybe I don't need to. Sort of getting at,
I can spin it another way. Maybe the best of yourself isn't just Al Mazur who runs a show in New York. Maybe the best self is
that what success is when someone looks as an artist. But I think me is accepting and enjoying my work more and myself, and maybe not being in such a panic. It's been sort of like fight or flight mode for years, and sort of now sort of loving myself a little bit more and enjoying the work and the process, that like slowing down is really actually helping me find more daily wins and weekly wins rather than like this big pinnacle solo show every time. I'm very lucky, I get offered to have solo shows quite a lot, and I've turned down them this year and thinking that that might be a bad idea, but it's actually been great. It's been really good because it actually helped me regroup and slow stuff down so much that then I can actually make better, more successful decisions later on, you know.
Yeah,
stepping out of that gun smoke and sort of standing up on the hill a little bit and sort of seeing how your life plays out, or what you can do to sort of put better systems in, removes that sort of hustle mentality. I think hustle mentality again is a bit lack of planning. That's just how I sort of take it sometimes. I put the head down, don't get me wrong, I fucking work hard and enjoy it. But I also found I make the best decisions and best growth when I sort of slow it down and take a minute and don't be in the studio just with my head down painting all the time. I probably paint 10% and think 90%, you know, and that's how I get the best results. It used to be the other way around. And then you're just like grafting through this sort of mud, trying to fucking find a solution rather than giving yourself the space and time to sit back and go, really think about something and then execute a little bit more considered. Yeah. I guess it's the exact same with your training.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I talked about with Dan about this just literally about an hour ago.
Right.
About I'm at the point now where I am feeling like I'm in that hustle mode. Because there's just so much to do, but I feel like it's because I'm in the hustling part so much and there's so many plates to spin that I don't have enough time to think about systems and think about planning.
Yeah.
And it's like, we kind of need to, as you said there, say no to the shows or say no to certain things.
Yeah. Now that's a luxury to be able to say that too. Like, I'm very mindful of my position. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I say that.
So. Yeah. 100%. But it's like on a bigger scale than that, right? We look at our lives as a pie of energy.
Mm.
You can't take unlimited amounts of slices from this pie.
Totally.
So if you're trying to take slices from the dad pie, slices from the husband pie, slices from the artist pie, from the, you know, and all these slices from the one pie, you're not going to be able to just keep taking slices. You have to be able to give back too.
Yeah. You're putting too many slices over the one thing, and then you're wondering why. And that's when you talk about the pie, I sort of reference this integrated lifestyle, how everything feeds into each other. And sometimes you know, I speak to a lot of artists, and maybe they're wondering why they're not getting whatever for what they're putting in. But I sort of look at all the other aspects of their life, and maybe they're just a little bit too consumed with socializing or going out drinking too much, and that has a knock-on effect to your mental health, your relationships, stuff like that. So everything sort of feeds into one another. So that's what I'm saying. So stepping back and not just going into the studio painting. And I do that. Maybe we need to talk about the word hustle a bit, because I'm probably putting it in the space that I see online quite a lot, like the bro stuff. And if you want to, like, hard work and hustle is different than working hard. Like, I start early, I go training, I put time into studio, I don't switch off, and I make sure I'm available for my community and my family. So if that's hustle, okay, that's maybe hustle, but like, maybe I've got a slow hustle.
I don't think hustle has to be something that makes us feel bad or losing energy. I think hustle can be like, I suppose, what, again, for me to give a bit of a distinction between a hustle and the other side of hustle, which is like hustling for the sake of it, to just get more.
Without contributing and just taking. That's it. Yeah. Like,
whereas I can hustle where I'm today looking after clients before I met you to do the podcast, and then I've got my, you know, another bit of work to do, client related, but then it's family.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could say that's a hustle type day, but when I spend time with my family, it's giving me that back as well, you know? So, so it's not so much that I'm like, I see my family as work, but if you don't work at being a family man, you don't work at being a dad and a husband, you can forget about those aspects.
100%, man.
Do you feel like that since you've become a dad, that it has given you pause for thought about who you are as a person?
Yeah, it definitely influences your work. I think you have to be, as an artist, try and be as aware as you can. I think that's where you're... inspiration can come from. So yeah, just being a dad now has definitely made me rethink stuff, my life again, going back to who I was, who I am now. The responsibility and accountability is a great motivator. There's a lot there now. It's making me think, there's I don't know if my wife told you, did she, about the speech?
No.
So to give context, we first met, what was it, in Glendalough?
In Glendalough, yeah.
We went, and that was a week before my wedding. So we only met you once, and you made it into my wedding speech.
Go on, you can say.
Yeah. And I just thought it was funny, just when you're talking about fatherhood, it reminded me to say it. We were in Glendalough, did a night hike, wasn't it? And then the week later, I was getting married on a Saturday, and you had a great influence and impact on me, and that hike was great. We were both going up there, a few other guys came with us, but you made it into the speech anyway.
Yeah.
That was good. I'll try to remember sort of what I was saying.
I think Dee had said this to me already.
Yeah.
I remember what I said. I remember what you had taken from what I had said.
Yeah, it was something along the lines of, like, obviously the speech went on for a bit, but like, the part was where I said, being a father is important to me. Actually, being a good father is important to me. I was on a hike this day last week with a men's group. In case you ladies don't know what us men do up in the mountains together in the middle of the night, we speak about you, our partners, our children. And I was up there with a fella called Connor from Cork. And we were sort of walking single file, and we had our head torches on. You know, we're going up the Glendalough path there. And we were both sort of talking about our new experience of fatherhood. And I was saying I was going to get married next week. And you said to me, the best thing you can do for your child is to love your wife. And that just really rang true to me up there in the mountains that night. And so it sort of fed its way into speech, because I wanted to reference family and my son and stuff like that. So kudos to you for making it into the speech.
Yeah, look, I think I probably soaked that up from somewhere else.
Yeah,
and that's the way it is. These ideas get passed on, you know, because they're worthwhile. And I definitely feel like that. I've even since then have leaned into this whole idea of like, I am a mirror of what a man is to my son.
Yeah, yeah.
And you are a mirror of what a man is to your son. Yeah. And so he and my son, so Alfie and Cooen look at us and they go, that's the way a woman is treated. Strictly off what I do. Strictly of how I treat my wife.
Yeah.
That's how he is going to base how he's to treats women. That's because we are the best and most universal kind of figure of a man.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a serious responsibility.
It's great that we have that awareness. Maybe that's coming from our upbringings or something, but I wasn't aware of that, the influence or negative influence that my father might have had on me. Only into my late 30s where I really sort of had to reflect and go like, oh my God. And now that I'm a father, I'm sort of lucky and blessed to have that, to be able to already, like our kids are young, to have that awareness and be like, okay, what's our role here and what positive influence can we do? And even that, we're talking about we talk about artistic career and the things around it. You want to be healthy so you can have a career for longer. And I think Alfie's two, I'm 42. On his 21st birthday, I'll be, 63. I need to take care of myself now to make sure I'm available and fit and do all the things that I love doing now with him, hopefully, if he's interested in doing that. So you have to sort of put in the work now, just like any career. You have to do the hustle now for the 60s. Or, you know, when he's 30, I'm going to be 70. So I want to make sure that I'm... So he's really reframed my mindset on a lot of things. And I'm still working on it. Like, I'm still trying to figure it all out. But he's been a hugely amazing benefit and influence to me. And he doesn't even know it already.
Mm.
Like, he's made me a healthier, more grounded, understanding man already. And he's just buzzing around throwing his Lego at my head.
When
you're looking at your little fella and you're loving him, I think this, like, you're loving him because it's your child, but I think without me even realizing, I'm just saying thanks to him. There's so much appreciation, you know. Like, the thought of Friday night, went to bed at 7 o'clock with him to read the book, that would have horrified me a few years ago. Thought of getting into bed and what have I lost? You know, what have I lost this Friday night? But now with Alfie, I've gained weekends, I've gained my health. Like, it's just reframing everything all down to this little fella.
Yeah.
You know,
it's it's amazing, man.
It really is, isn't it?
You mentioned about about success, right? And about the idea of self-love and self-acceptance.
Yeah.
Do you think that you becoming a dad was a catalyst for that, or were you already on the road?
I was on the road in the last few years, but there was a lot of it wasn't good for years. A lot of negative thoughts about myself, my parents, who I am. Really had no self-worth. I think that's like, if you can sort of come through that, it sort of definitely gives you the mental armor to maybe, you know. I think if I probably didn't go through that, we wouldn't be sitting here. I mightn't have the opportunities or the successful career that I have now without that sort of plight, for lack of better words. But I struggled quite a lot with my mental health. I don't know if artists are more vulnerable to that or what, but diagnosed with a thing called chronic stress disorder, and then had to take anxiety and depression then for a few years. I think I was coming to terms with a few things, and the idea of rejection, and just sort of all compounding on me for fucking years, like, you know. And then that being released out, and really negative actions and really hurting people and myself, and it just gets to a point, if I was to sort of put it in the simplest way, just sort of got sick of my own shit. You know, and what can I do? Maybe with age as well, I got a bit more aware. Now from the outside in, when people are looking, I'm still making art and doing stuff, but I wasn't, my actions weren't aligned with my intentions. I wanted to be this, but then I'm still doing this, you know? And so, taking accountability and sort of, what can you do, you know, having the sort of mindset, and I probably addressed it to artists as well, and so you sort of tipped on there, what advice could you give an artist? It's sort of sounds a bit negative, but there's no cavalry coming over the hill to save you. You're sort of here on your own, and if you sort of hold on to that mentality a little bit, now I'm not talking about having community, I'm just talking about a mindset of you're responsible for your own successes and losses, let's say. That can be a good driver, motivator to sort of, for me, to get my shit together. And I think you have to be sort of ready for it as well, or open to it, and it'll sort of come in front of you. Sounds very godlike what I'm talking there, but I'll bring it to meditation. Meditation sort of came to me, or I found meditation. And that was a good callus for change for me, when I was open to going to TM, Transcendental Meditation, and it sort of slowed everything down and gave me good understanding. And then I built that with training. I was training always sort of, but was doing it for the wrong reasons, really. Like, I train now, think about my son and mobility and, you know, but prior to that, it might have been to look good. And, well, it's a nice effect if you do look good from training. But yeah, so I was doing meditation. Then sort of just a lot of sort of self-care. I never really understood the value of it. Some way, if I thought about it, I thought it was sort of selfish in some way, you know, that doing stuff for yourself is selfish, but it's actually just building great foundations, because if you're able to, again, I'm still working on it, like, love yourself, and then you're able to then project that onto others, you know, and share that sort of love and build communities and stuff like that. So that's only really, really happened to me in the last 5 years. Again, like, there's been success and great pinnacles in my career of different things and achievements and shows and living away in the States and travel, like, literally traveling the world, making art is fucking amazing. But during that journey, if I look back, there was a lot of loneliness, a lot of, why am I doing this? Who am I doing it for? So I had to sort of regroup with that. And at the height of my success, I decided to move back to Dublin, because I needed to feel a bit more grounded, feel at home. I was sort of disjointed. I sort of talk about this idea of, like, driving a car, and everyone's looking at me and I'm waving out the window, but the steering wheel's fucking disconnected to the car, and I've no control over this thing, like, you know. And there's a lot of burnout there, because maybe I was hustling a little bit too much, but to the extent of, like, the burnout where I was coming back to Dublin and getting, like, vitamin whatever B or D injections from the doctor in my arse to get back on a flight the next day, I was that exhausted. Because what I was doing was having big shows. You'd fly in, build a big, large art installation or paintings, have the show open on Thursday night, and fly to another country Friday, and you have to be on top form again. That just compounded me, especially then when I wasn't doing what I really, really wanted to do, because I was sort of just fulfilling other people's prophecies of me. So yeah, I came back to Dublin, and I said, what does that look like, you know? Because in terms of progressing your career, it's probably taking a step back, but I knew I really had to work on myself. And didn't want to follow the same paths as others. And to what I thought was a man, you know. So I came back, and I had traveled and I found meditation. I'd been to sort of Phuket Cleanse, this place, you know, like a yoga meditation retreat. Sort of, and my influence of going to States and sort of seeing cultures there, and I sort of brought it all back to Dublin. Instead of home to me, I guess you would think would be to get an apartment, but it was actually my studio would make more sense to get a space there, because I'm in there all the time. So I invested in trying to find a space and then bring all these aspects in, rather than just being a painting studio. So that's sort of where Atelier Now was born, my studio. And it became the sort of incubator, and it really fed me and then fed my community. And I was able to do work that was more aligned with what I wanted to do, you know, so That's pretty much, I just summed up my life there.
Thanks for doing that so quickly for us. It's like there's two things that you touched on that I wanted to kind of ask you more about, was this whole idea of your actions not aligning with your intentions.
Yeah.
And kind of, I think sometimes when that happens, we actually get a more, so that's what we think the fight is. But the over kind of arching umbrella of it is we're not actually living to our values.
Yeah.
Our values, let's say, might be, oh yeah, my value is my health and my well-being and all that kind of stuff. No, it's if you look at what you're doing and your actions, the way you're living.
Yeah. But see, I didn't know what my values were. Mm. And I'm just looking for gratification and immediate gratification.
Yes.
So I'll do that work, or I'll hang out with those people, or I'll compromise myself. Even though I don't want to go out, I'll go out because I want to be a people pleaser. I want to do this, I want to do that. So I think that's, where you're like, why aren't I this far in my career? I'm doing this work, and then you don't look at what you did over the last 2 months, and then you wonder. And then, so I guess, when I sort of understand that a bit more, and then got to understand that, you're accountable for your own sort of success or not. Mm. Now that's again generalized. Like, I know luck has a part to play. I do think hard work can sort of offer up more opportunities as well. It's been not really switching off as well. Like, if you enjoy, I call it like my monkey brain. My brain is like fucking, I've already thought about the currents behind you there. Like, everything's sort of going off constantly. And the textures and everything is just like, and the colors. Like, that's why I've made reference twice when I came into the room. It's quite visually rich. It's nice, and the table and all. But that used to be in some way a burden years ago. And then I had to take medication for 2-3 years, and that's just switched off. Just stopped, and it was very scary. And then I just sort of come to accept that, like, oh, I don't have that creative brain anymore. It's gone. Because it used to be bombarding me at night, like, anyway, it's back. And it's good, and I nurture it, and I love it, and I protect it as much as I can. Like,
I was just about to ask that second part of this thing, was the protecting of the creative space.
Yeah.
And the protecting of, let's say you have somebody who's looking for you to collaborate on a job with you. How do you protect your personal and creative space?
Yeah, that comes from just doing a lot of wrong things, a lot of experience in it. Asking advice is always really good too, there's a great artistic community there, creative community, just bounce ideas off each other, or have you worked with that person? But knowing what your boundaries are and your values and your self-worth, because especially in industries, creative industries, they'll find a way of breaking you down. And so without feeling too compromised, to be, so you have to sort of be, I guess, like, where am I going with this? To sort of survive, I guess, most humans and species had to adapt over years, and I presume, I don't know about it, but like, we had to adapt, and that's how we survived. And the same sort of goes with an artistic career. You hold on to your values and who you are and your voice, but you have to sort of lend and adapt and change. And that actually gives you a great spectrum of tools when you do it then, And so then when it comes to a project or a job where you'll sort of have the ability to sort of lend yourself better to it, if you're not. But you have to sort of put a stamp. Like, I say this because I've been in situations where I used to do commercial work, and I thought my self-value was so low that I was so grateful to do this rasher ad for rashers or sausages or something, like painting garbage, to the extent where I'm crying, man. I'm like crying because I have got some other canvas to get done for some sorts. Why I'm so upset is because these agencies are just hitting you up. Where's this product? Where's this thing? And they don't realize you're pouring everything into it that you have. And you're doing it, and I'm crying because I'm totally compromised. I've started doing these works to like fund my little revolution, let's say, and to be able to paint. But then if you're sort of half good at something, you'll just become really popular at it, and you're getting smashed all these jobs. And because I didn't have value in myself, I couldn't say no to anything. And then no value in myself, that I was afraid if I don't do it, I won't get another job. So I found I was in this sort of hustle, fucking do everything really, really quick as fast as I can. and scrape and take and take. And that was just grating on me so much, you know. So that's why that was a real pinnacle that day. I was crying in my garage, you know, and had a mark on it, smashed it off the ground, and just fucking couldn't understand why I was so frustrated. But looking back, it was because of that. So yeah, you have to really protect yourself. And unfortunately, just sometimes you just got to go through it to understand it and experience it.
I think two things that I've taken from what you were saying there was, like, the best things that have ever happened to me in my life are failures and mistakes.
Yeah.
For helping me with the future.
Yeah.
So, like, successes, although feel great, they never, ever help you, help you propel forward as much as a failure or a setback or a time when you made a mistake or a misjudgment.
Yeah. Right?
And the second thing as well is like, in practice, it's very, in let's say, speaking about it, being true to yourself is one of the best things that we can do for ourselves and being, you know, and valuing ourselves.
Mm.
But if you have if you've got rent to pay,
yeah,
and have no food in your fridge and a job comes in and it doesn't exactly align with who you see yourself being.
Mm. How do you do that? The way I do that for me is I put a timestamp on it. I go, right, this isn't me. I'm in this fucking fight or flight situation at the moment. I'm going to do this for 6 months, put the head down, try and get as much work as I can. If this is compromising, if people outside think this is compromising, well, fuck them. I got to do this right now. And then the bigger goal is I'm going to get back to my shit right now, or else I get up 2 hours earlier. I stay up 2 hours later, go to the studio and put those hours in. And, you know, you know more than anyone the discipline of training. I'm sure you hit that certain kilometre and you're bollocks. Same in the studio, you just want to go home. It's fucking freezing, you're tired, there's no creative. Everything you do is a bad brush stroke. But I just go, give it just 2 more hours, man. To even sit down there for a minute and just chill it, and then something might come of it. And it usually does.
Mm.
And so as much as I shit on the hustle thing, this grafting, you know, actually discipline is a much better word to use. Introducing discipline into my craft, into my studio practice or murals or whatever is the best way to do it, because people probably think artistic career is very, you know, we're spoiled with whatever and we just flow. You have to be disciplined. You have to sort of nurture those ideas and put in sort of systems in place to be able to get to your flow state. Mm. You know, you have to, I'm painting tomorrow and Wednesday, 2 solid days, because I have to go to London on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I'm not painting today. And I took today off and yesterday off painting. But I do everything in place to get ready to get into that flow state for Tuesday morning.
Mm.
I won't drink on the weekend. I'll have great conversations with you after this. We might, you know, just family time. And then I go up in the morning, I'll have a nice coffee. I'll time it well to be able to get to that space. And that's discipline there. It's not just going out in the tear for the weekend and then expecting I can go in and avail of the best, create the best work I can. You know, it takes a lot of... So it all feeds back to that sort of integrated, or that big pie you're talking about, like everything has a feed, you know. So for that slither of painting time, if I nurture and like the family time, my health, whatever else, all my other businesses and socializing, being friends, will then allow me just that in that small pocket of time to paint, I'll be able to utilize it as best I can.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine that disciplined way of life and that structured way of life kind of keeps you quite connected to the art in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I used to be quite separated from it, probably because when we did graffiti years ago, it was, you know, an alias and it's quite separate. And I kept sort of Al and Mesa sort of separate. But now it is me and it's my work and it's expression of myself. And it's really more, my work is really more in tune with who I am. And the whole community that it brings now, you know, for the artists. And it's very, very rewarding.
Mm.
You know,
because like I feel just the creative space is kind of sometimes different to, let's say, something that like I do, running, right? Some days you have to force running.
Yeah.
Right. It's not that you're injured or it's not that you're too tired. It's just one of those fucking days, man. And
yeah,
I've had some recently and where you're just like, why? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So,
and it's those days that are actually, they're incredibly challenging. And sometimes you don't even get the feedback that you usually get from yourself. Sometimes you go in, you go out on those runs where you're just absolutely meh and you go out and you do it and you're like, oh, I'm going to feel great after this. And you don't.
Yeah.
You just get inside, you're fucking clammy and sweaty. You're in there, your family's already in bed and your house is fucking empty and cold and you kind of go, I'm going to hop in the shower. You know what I mean, right? So does the artistic process mirror that in ways?
Yeah, totally. I feel it is. And then you have to really, I guess.
Do you force it sometimes?
Yeah, I did it there the other day. I was like, I have to go put an hour into the studio, and I did. And sometimes it works. Sometimes, the finish line's always dance. Where are you going to land? Am I terrible or am I brilliant? And, you know, the other day I landed with like, I'm actually destroying these canvases and I have to step away, making an absolute balls of them. Because I was thinking like, oh yeah, I'll just go with my gut on this. And I went with it and spent already hours on these fucking paintings. Just this quick move of not thinking, I just sort of destroyed them. So through experience, I just learned to, you're not a complete failure. It's okay. Put them aside. You had a bad day. Like, put them out of your mind, and then we'll readdress it again with fresh eyes in a few days. And that's what I'm going to do tomorrow and go in and look at it. But yeah, you get the days where you're just making them balls.
Is that a new thing that you're able to kind of separate Al from these paintings?
Yeah. It takes a while because I think that's what slows a lot of artists down, if I was to take a stab at it. I think it's, they really hold their worth in their work. And it is like, it's pouring through you and it's coming out into, you know, onto a canvas or a sculpture or music, whatever it is. But it is just one moment at that time that you did that. It's not a full reflection of your worth, you know, and I think it hinders then a lot of artists to stop them from showing their work. And I tried to sort of explain that my mind is that, like, oh, you've done this work on canvas, and if you're proud enough, you know, you think it's okay, give it its voice, give it its space to be shown and share it, like, you know, through social media or whatever. And again, you'll look back and it might be failures, but it's still a stepping stone towards something greater.
Yeah, because I that's another thing that we all can relate to, even if we're not artists, right, is our work or our products of what we do being who we are, right? And being our kind of anchor point for acceptance in society.
Yeah.
You know, because I've definitely been there, like with let's say when I was Thai boxing for years, I attach an awful lot of my self-worth as to how well I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, if I was training consistently and I was doing everything, I could kind of find a basis for me kind of going, yeah, you're doing great, you're doing good. And then if I was winning fights and stuff, even better. But it was completely and utterly, I was kind of almost destroying who I was to keep that.
Yeah, yeah, right? That was me a few years ago.
You know, and I feel like that's something that, whether you're in that fucking process or not, like, that I'm very conscious of that then when it comes to running, that running never takes that place.
Right.
And I think that part of that is realizing that we aren't what we do.
But it's hard to separate that, isn't it?
This is the thing that I wanted to ask you, is like, how do you do that as an artist when, like, you know, what you do is an expression sometimes of who you are? You know what I mean? They're so tangled.
Yeah. It's dangerous at times, yeah, because you're putting all your worth and your identity into your work. I guess the only way to do it is just explore avenues and what sort of tickles you a little bit. So hiking or getting outside or doing other sort of activities will maybe help you reframe that, oh, not all of me is just this. There is other parts of me. And I'm still trying to figure that shit out as well, you know. But I do know that my wife loves me because I'm Al, not because of the painting I did last week. So I look at that, you know. And
that's an anchor point for you.
Yeah.
And,
you know, again, with your family, like, it's a good reference point to look back on. But I also take a lot of pride in what I do because I'm lucky because it is sort of expressing who you are too and your observations of the world. And then you're getting to like to show people, you're going to create something that had never been in existence. And now here it is, whether if someone deems it good or bad or whatever, it's still a creation. And that also is an anchor point.
Yeah. You know? 100%. But like, have you ever had a time where where work of yours or what you do has been ridiculed and where you've had to kind of try and fucking...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're painting massive murals out in the public because people are going to give their opinion, you know?
Yeah. Has that been an evolution for you?
Yeah. Yes, loads of stories for that.
Go on, tell me if
you've got... No, but I just think of... One. I don't know why I was painting in London. I don't know. This paint is massive pink. And this lady came back and said, I fucking hate pink. And I was like, you fucking hate pink. Whatever. But like, you know, it's just sort of, murals are a good sort of, they're like a good vehicle for people to just sort of say how the fuck they feel with no filter, you know, or just like, what is that? That is absolutely useless. And you're like, oh man, I've been at this for like 4 days. You know, they've no context of like who's actually doing it and the work you're putting in. Mm. And then you get some goodies too. Like people, overall, I'm lucky, but people seem to get a good response. So what was the question again?
I suppose I went
straight back to that woman. She was quite funny.
Dealing with, let's say, somebody who, let's say, has not the same idea or view that you have about your work or a negative view of it. Like,
Yeah.
Was that something that really ate into you at the beginning or?
When I was younger and you did graffiti and stuff like that, maybe like, you know, but, because it's stylistically, you know, there's frameworks there. But like art is very subjective. I got my opinions on certain pieces that I do like or don't like. But I'll be also very mindful of how I express that. And there's no point feeding bad energy to someone if you don't, like, what's that going to fucking do?
Mm.
There's critiquing work. If someone asks for an opinion or, you know, within our community, we're like, oh, what if we did this? Or, and I get that advice too. And sort of trying to dismantle the ego to where you're able to take that on both sides can be really, really beneficial. But like, yeah, you know, I've been in the States with galleries there and collectors coming in and just absolutely shredding my shit. But I'm looking at him, I'm like, you don't have a fucking clue. Like who I am or what I'm trying to say right now. Like from your world, your vessel, he was a doctor. This is zero relevance. This is zero. And I'm just sort of in my mind going, we're just on different frequencies here. This is incredible for me. And then you'll have someone that can come in and trigger something very emotive in them. And so yeah, you have to just sort of take each to their own. Try not to take it onto, and like social media is a bastard for that. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But like all you have to do is go click on their profile and then you'll be like, it's either a bot or it's, you know, like, you know, they're just spewing out sort of negative stuff.
Just to get that reaction kind of thing, like really, isn't it? Like a lot of the time.
We do it too. We might respond, but we see something and we will react to it internally and, you know, and you have to sort of address that and, yeah.
See where it's coming from.
Yeah, exactly. See where it's coming from.
Because your like, sense of self can sometimes be tied up in the art of what you do. That's where I think that for artists, it's got to be super difficult sometimes.
Yeah, I think you're quite vulnerable because you have to be very open to be aware to take in stuff. And with that, you could sort of say it's like a wound. Like, you know, if you care for what goes in there, or like, you know, if you protect it, like, you know. And so you have to be really open and sort of absorb your environment and get inspiration. Can also take in a lot of that negative stuff as well. So it's just how you feed that and how you can make it work towards you.
I like the idea when you were saying there about like artists that if they are putting an awful lot of value of themselves and worth and the kind of self-acceptance in ways just on the work they do.
Yeah.
You know, if we feel accepted because people are accepting our work, then we have a very tenuous self-acceptance. That's quite soft and quite conditional as well. It's conditional that my work is good and being appraised well.
Yeah, yeah.
So by having these other avenues of like you were saying there, even just with your wife, like these create these anchor points sometimes that can, not that they give us value or acceptance in themselves, but sometimes they can be a reminder to pull our locomotive fucking, you know, our mind, stop them from spinning the wheels.
Yeah.
Do you know? So it's like for anyone that's listening to this, I think even whether you're an artist or not, it's like, have we created, and this is just even me speaking about, let's say, my time with Thai boxing, I created such a one-dimensional life.
Yeah.
It was so one-dimensional. Yeah. Every other aspect of life was to feed this one aspect.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so if you have a one-dimensional life and that dimension is taken away, what do you have?
Yeah, this is it, like, you know.
You know?
So, like, let me think back to what you said there a second ago. So, yeah, when I'm painting, still celebrate the wins. If you do a piece and you're happy with it and you go, fuck it, that's great. You know, I'm not saying don't have a blanket, like, flat feeling about anything. Like, you know, celebrate, this is great, I feel good. Do I think this is aligning with what I want to say? And that's great, go with that. And then, but for me, I would manage that. I wouldn't be like, I'm a genius after that. So then what counter to that, then that manages the other side of it, that if it's didn't go the way it's wanted to go, I'm not fucking terrible. I got tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Then also, we were talking about feeding that aspect. Me feeding, let's say, the Dublin Boys Club, the hiking group. I went up, I think it was Glen Dulloch actually, and there was about 20 of us and went up. And that feeling that I had when I do a painting and it would align and hit the point of like, that's worked. I got the same feel on the hikes. Mm. With the guys, there's a book called Love Languages and talk about your love tank for up the mountains, my love tank for. But like that, I had the same feeling of what I got when I painted. So I feed that more, nurture that a little bit more, like, you know. So
yeah,
it made me less one dimensional in terms of finding who I am and my rewards. And then I'm like, so why am I getting that same feeling to that? And then when I do a public mural and it's to help a community, so then I've sort of begin to realize, oh, maybe the painting isn't my thing, and maybe it's actually just a vehicle for building communities and fostering that. And Atelier Now is actually, maybe it's not an art gallery, a studio, maybe it's an art piece, and it's just building a whole community. It's just like a great art experience. Mm. And same with the Dublin Boys Club, and collaborating with another, like, musicians, and, you know, helping their community and, you know, communicating to their community. So it's all sort of, that's what I'm sort of getting to understand a little bit more now.
It's kind of like your motivation, the reasons why you are make art.
Yeah. Yeah, still trying to, like, I guess you want to live forever. I think everyone has that idea. Yeah. And so you're probably trying to leave a mark behind, maybe. Or maybe you try to live forever through community. I don't know. Or to our children. But, like, I'm finding great motivation in giving back or being a part of a community than being isolated in a studio of just self-expression.
Mm. That's it, yeah. I think that's a great distinction to make, is like our what and our why are so different. The what we do is we make art.
Yeah.
The way we do it could be completely unrelated to sometimes the action.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like we make art, but it's like what I'm seeking from this art is to pull people into this space and to pull people into thought and connection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is such a beautiful thing to think about, really. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm gonna leave you in this question, right? Because of the conversation that we've had here, right? And this is like, you're like, oh fuck, what's he gonna ask me? But what I'm gonna ask you is, the Al that found himself reeling, lost the kind of the way of himself that you had mentioned there earlier on, when he was, you know, he's on medication and did not have that self-love and that self-acceptance and did not have the vehicle for that. If you could sit down with him like I was sitting down right across from you here now, what would you say to him?
Oh God, probably start crying or something. But then I'd be like, that's okay. I think there's a lot of that bottled up. I didn't cry. But I'd just be really emotionally available for him and sort of understand, like trying to, couldn't really lend any advice to him, and sort of hold his hand and bring him along with me and sort of be very emotionally available for him.
Mm.
And, you know, just, I don't know, I'd have to think about that now. That's a, that'd be a quite important task to talk to him. But like, you know, I admire his motivation and his grit and his sort of good instinct to navigate him to where he is now.
Would you tell him that?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd commend him on that a bit. And we went off track a lot. And but I think, you know, it's, I'm probably, you hear a lot of people speaking and they're kind of shit together in their 30. How old are you?
32.
And you got your shit together. But like, I was a late bloomer.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's amazing. It's amazing to see what you do. Like, it's inspiring. That's what, it's the same when we met that first time up the mountain. It was great. And the other times we met before then were in the International Men's Day hike. And we're still outdoors. This is the first time sort of sitting down indoors together. But we're both sort of feeding that world that we're probably getting more out of it than we're given, you know. I feel that's it. So on the outside, people might be like, oh, these guys are really contributing, but secretly we're probably getting a lot more than what we give, like, you know.
I think you have to and I talked about this with Dan before we sat down about, like, we cannot give what we don't have for ourselves.
Yeah,
we can't give acceptance to people or understanding or love to others properly.
Yeah.
Unless we have.
Yeah, I used to understand that, you know, where you can't love someone without loving yourself. And fucking that's true.
Mm.
Like, it really is. You can think you can.
Mm. Can't pour from an empty cup kind of thing, you know? It's, yeah. You know, it's, yeah, like. And I was asked that very same question of, like, what would you do if you could sit down to Connor in his early 20s, kind of late teens, early 20s, who was really struggling with who he was and really struggling to kind of, you know, not try and just try to be accepted and not rejected by people and doing the things to make him feel good.
Yeah.
And I tried to talk to him and I tried to tell people that Connor was not in a position to take any advice.
This is it. When you're actually saying it there, it's, in my mind now, when you say it, it's probably too late. I probably need to jump back another decade to then chat to that all there to stop him from going there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's probably a bit too late, you know. I don't think I would have listened.
Yeah, no, I don't think I would have listened either. And I commend anybody that is actually, that is just open to ideas. Because not many of us are open to, like, direct advice. You should do this.
And that's what I was trying to address when I came on here. And I hope I haven't been preaching, because that really doesn't sit well with me when people are trying to tell me what to do.
Mm.
You know, you have to sort of pick it and it sort of stick to you. Someone say something. Like that talk up the mountains that came into my wedding speech now. So it sticks on to you, like, without it being directly pointed at you, you know?
Exactly. It's like, that's why I have this, why I want to have a conversation with somebody on this, because I'd like someone to be just kind of like, we're all sitting down having a coffee. Me and you were chatting. They're just having an old listen. That's the way I wanted this, because if I was going to ask you, who's your advice to this? What's your advice to that? What's your advice to this? It does, you know, it's
very formulaic. Yeah, it doesn't really.
Yeah. And I suppose that's kind of, let's say, if I'm leaning into a beat, like, because I see this as an artistic process in a way as well, to bring kind of spoken, you know, a conversation and make a conversation. Because this is the thing about both podcasts and conversation and art, it is subjective.
Yeah.
Because people are going to take what we say so differently. So many people are going to take what we say
at that time they are listening to. I do that the same as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, my way of communicating is painting. So that's why I was a bit like, oh, what can I say when I come on here? Because this is my way of expressing myself, you know. So I'm trying to sort of pull together, and I'm probably slow when I'm speaking because brain's going over.
I'm asking you to speak. I should have given you a few paints and a fucking I can't just film you for an hour. Look, man, I really have enjoyed this chat, man.
Yeah,
honestly
too, man.
And here it's like, you know, I had no expectations of whatever it was, but I just like, fucking man, just have a good chat with a guy that I really admire, you know.
Admire you
so
too.
Um, before I go, if there's anybody that wants to know more about you, where can you be found? What lair do you be in?
Oh, my studio is just on Charlemagne Street there, Atelier now. So I'm there most days. If you're floating around town, big open windows, you'll see it from there. Just call in. Like Instagram, yeah. Mesa Art. That's it.
Mesa.
But I probably don't utilize that tool enough. I post some random shit about my kid stories.
Yeah.
And put up some work when I need to. I should use that more. It doesn't interest me, unfortunately.
This is another thing about social media and the artistic process is I don't want to it's like, am I making this just to put it up?
Yeah.
Or am I just putting it up to make money?
Yeah.
And then am I just doing this to do this?
Yeah. And your mind can change again. You might have to do that for a while. But yeah, my mind is like, oh, I should really invest more time into this. I don't get much from it, But yeah. You have to, I guess, play the necessary evil.
Well, all I can say from the conversation of what I've taken, Al, is that, we can use intention and being intentional about what we do, but also be understanding that, from day to day, life is life and it changes. And, I really like that you just kind of have this more accepting idea about you and your life.
I think gratitude has a lot to play with that, and sort of slow it down and see what happens tomorrow or next year.
It's amazing, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Nice one.
Cheers, Al.